It's just another law in Deuteronomy's massive catalog of laws, but something in the way it's written sounds like a fragment from some lost legend. Ki tiena la'ish shtei nashim, if a man has two wives, one loved and the other hated, and both the loved and the hated have borne him sons, but the firstborn is the son of the hated one. When he wills his property to his sons, he may not treat as firstborn the son of the loved one in disregard of the son of the hated one, who is older. Instead, he must accept the firstborn, the son of the hated one, and give him a double portion, since he is the first fruit of his vigor, reshit ono lo. The birthright is his due. These are just the rules of inheritance, clarified. Somehow it breaks the heart to hear them. A hated wife in the shadow of a beloved one, a husband's unfair disregard, and the poor child who was innocently born into disfavor. It reads like a story. And in fact, it is one. It's the story of Reuven, Yaakov's firstborn son. The references are barely concealed. Yaakov is the character we know who had multiple wives. His second wife, Rachel, was the one he loved, and Reuven's mother, Leah, was the one that God saw was hated. Yosef, Rachel's firstborn, was the child that Yaakov loved above all his sons. And, if there were still any doubt, the most unusual phrase in the law above, the first fruit of his vigor, reshit ono, is exactly the one that Yaakov uses to describe Reuven in his final blessing to him. Reuven bechoriata, kochi vereshit oni, yeter se'et v'yeter az. Reuven, you are my firstborn, my might, and the first fruit of my vigor. But why bring Reuven's story up now, centuries later? And why so subtly? Reuven has not been one of the most prominent figures in the Torah's narrative. We get only glimpses of him along the way while others are in the spotlight. But a careful reconstruction of these pieces of Reuven's life reveals his story to be one of the most tragic in the Bible. He is indeed the firstborn of Yaakov's 13 children. We might have expected him to be destined for glory. But even at the moment of his birth, there are portents of pain. Vatahar Leah v'teled ben v'tikrashmo Reuven. Leah conceived and bore a son and named him Reuven, for she declared, "The Eternal saw my suffering, ki ra'a Hashem ba'onyi, and now my husband will love me, ki ata yahaveni ishi." The name Reuven appears to be an exclamation of delight at the appearance of a child, Reu ben, meaning see a son. But the explanation Leah gives for the name inserts two other more tragic meanings into the name by playing with the same consonant sounds, so that Reuven now also means Ra'a Ba'onyi, God has seen my suffering, and Ra'a Yehaveni, God saw, and now Yaakov will love me. These are Leah's expressions of her own pain, but they become infused in Reuven's identity and suggestive of his fate. He too will suffer and be desperate for his father's love. The next time we hear about Reuven, it is a strange scene indeed. He is still a boy, the family is still growing, and his mother and Rachel are still competing for Yaakov's affections. Reuven, with intentions somewhat unclear, ends up getting in the middle of this drama. Vayelech Reuven bimek tzir chitim v'yimtza dudaim basadeh. Once at the time of the wheat harvest, Reuven came upon some mandrakes in the field and brought them to his mother Leah. Rachel said to Leah, "Please give me some of your son's mandrakes." But she said to her, "Was it not enough for you to take away my husband, but you would also take my son's mandrakes?" Rachel replied, "I promise he shall lie with you tonight in return for your son's mandrakes." The word for these mandrakes, in Hebrew, dudaim, is related to love, sharing the same root as dod, the word for beloved or lover, suggesting that there's some kind of aphrodisiac. The deal goes down between the two women, and When Yaakov comes home from the field that day, Leah tells him that he is now obligated to sleep with her. And it is Reuven, somewhat Oedipally, who has secured her that right. We will return to the Oedipal, but for now let's push forward in Reuven's life. The favoritism toward Yosef drives the rest of his brothers wild with hatred. They decide to kill him and throw him into a pit. We remember this story as a team effort, of all against one, but look at how Reuven responds to their murderous plot. Vayishma Reuven, when Reuven heard of it, he tried to save him from them. He said, "Let us not take his life." Reuven said, "Shed no blood. Cast him into that pit out there in the wilderness, but do not send him to his death." For Reuven intended to save him from them and return him to their father. Reuven was playing the role of the firstborn, looking after the younger ones. He was the one brother who did not want to kill Yosef from the start, and the only one who ever intended to bring him back home. But his plan failed. As we know, Yosef was sold by his brothers into slavery in Egypt. This must have happened without Reuven present, because right afterwards we read, "When Reuven returned to the pit and saw that Yosef was not in the pit, he tore his clothes. He returned to his brothers and said, 'The boy is gone. Now what will become of me?'" This is the first sign that Reuven is cracking. He's failed in his capacity as the firstborn. He feels responsible for what has happened, but not so much that he's willing to confess. He felt compelled to save Yosef, but was not powerful enough to simply insist that the other brothers back off. He's a man torn between competing moral impulses, between bravery and cowardice. This inner conflict will continue and end up producing a man with instincts both noble and troubling. Years later, when Shimon has been captured by Yosef, who is calling for Binyamin to go down to Egypt, Yaakov is understandably terrified of losing more children and refuses to let him go. Reuven, who must once again feel panicked with the responsibility of the firstborn, this time for the brother closest to him in age, suddenly blurts out this disturbing offer. Vayomer Reuven el aviv lemor, "Et shtei banai tamit, im lo avienu elecha." Reuven said to his father, "You may kill my two sons if I do not bring him back to you. Put Binyamin in my care, and I will return him to you." Yaakov, not surprisingly, declines. "You may kill my two sons?" Why would Yaakov ever want to kill his own grandchildren? And what kind of father offers his own sons as a pledge? Someone willing to sacrifice his own children is not the person you trust your children to. Yehuda then steps up and offers himself as a pledge. Not his life, but his honor. And Yaakov accepts. From then on, it is Yehuda who assumes the symbolic place of the firstborn. Reuven has failed and begins to fade into the background. The last we hear of Reuven is in that moment of blessing we mentioned above. And yes, Yaakov starts by calling him Reshit Oni, the first fruit of my vigor, exceeding in rank and exceeding in strength. Reuven must have lapped thirstily at those words, finally feeling his father's love. But then Yaakov goes on, Pachaz Kamaim, unstable as water, you shall excel no longer. For when you mounted your father's bed, you disgraced yourself. My couch he mounted. Now, this isn't a blessing at all. It sounds more like a curse, and one filled with venom. For Yaakov is angrily referencing the most disturbing episode in Reuven's life. While Yaakov and his family were traveling back to the land of Canaan, Rachel dies, and Yaakov, also called Israel, travels on ahead to be alone. And then, out of nowhere, we read the following. Vayihi bishkon Yisrael ba'aretz ahi, while Israel stayed in that land, vayelech Reuven vishkav et bilha pilegesh aviv, vishma Yisrael. Reuven went and lay with Bilha, his father's concubine, and Israel heard about it. Now the sons of Yaakov were 12 in number, the sons of Leah, Yaakov's firstborn, Reuven, and Shimon, and Levi, and Yehuda, and Yisachar and Zvulun. The verse literally breaks off, using the unusual scribal device of a piska be'emtza pasuk, a break in the middle of a verse, and then moves quickly on to a new topic, as if the Torah doesn't want to talk about what's just happened. Instead, the next verse pointedly re-emphasizes Reuven's firstborn status, as if well aware that this status has just been jeopardized. Indeed, it seems that Reuven ultimately lost more than just a final blessing. In the books of Chronicles, which recount the lineages of all the biblical characters, we find this record of Reuven's legacy. Ki hu ha-bachor, he was the firstborn, but when he defiled his father's bed, his birthright was given to the sons of Yosef, son of Israel. So he is not reckoned as the firstborn in the genealogy. Reuven lost the birthright, not just symbolically, but literally. His portion was taken and given to Yosef. The firstborn son of the hated wife, who became hated himself, was passed over in favor of the firstborn of the beloved wife. In other words, what happened to Reuven is exactly what our law in Deuteronomy warns against. When he wills his property to his sons, he may not treat as firstborn the son of the loved one, in disregard of the son of the hated one. Why, then, does Moshe give this law now, here in the final book of the Torah, when it seems to directly contradict the outcome of the narrative that has come before it? On one level, Moshe appears to be offering a broad critique of the favoritism that characterized much of the family dynamics in the early stories of the Torah. Throughout the early generations of Genesis, the firstborn child was again and again supplanted by a younger sibling, either due to parental preferences or by divine command. Again and again, this led to bitter conflict and violence, and left one child out of the covenant. Moshe is therefore communicating to the children of Israel, who are about to cross over into the land, that in the new society they are about to create, the rules of inheritance must follow the universal standard of the law, rather than the unpredictable whims of a patriarch. That critique, however, could have been issued without the law making reference to Reuven in particular. It seems, then, that the tragic tale of Moshe's ancestor stuck with him, and he felt compassion for Reuven. For Reuven may have failed to live up to his potential as the firstborn of the covenantal family, but he never really had a chance. He was, after all, born to a mother who was unloved by his father. So he tried, unsuccessfully, to win that love back for her with those mandrakes. He knew his father loved Yosef best, so he tried to save Yosef and redeem himself in his father's eyes. But in that, too, he failed. Finally, when no one else seemed to love him, he tried to steal some love for himself and ended up cursed by the father he always wanted to please. A midrash from Bereshit Rabbati imagines Moshe pleading with God, despite all these failures, to maintain Reuven's legacy among the children of Israel. Kivan she'amad Moshe ve'bikesh alav rachamim ve'amar yechi Reuven. When Moshe stood before the Holy One, he asked for mercy for Reuven, as he said in his final blessing, "May Reuven live." As Moshe replaces the condemnation of Yaakov's final words to Reuven with this call for Reuven's enduring place among the tribes of Israel, he leaves them with a message that no one is irredeemable. From here on out, all the children of Israel will remain in the covenant.